Hi, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy. With me, as always, is Dave.
Hey, guys.
And this is episode 50 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast. Man, it's such a cool number. I feel like this should be a double-sized podcast.
Yeah.
Except that both Dave and I are suffering from sore throat, so that probably won't be the case.
It'll be a quarter-sized podcast.
Special anniversary 50th quarter size podcast. Yay. and like all 50th issues of comic books, this podcast will be covered in gold foil and will cost four times the usual price. I should have had a couple of like fill-in hosts to like come in and do like just 5-minute segments.
Yeah, right. That would be pretty good.
So we're going to be talking about new comics that are coming out Wednesday, December 17th. We're midway through December. I can't believe it. This year is almost over.
I know. Flying by.
The upside of that is we've got a new issue of Multiversity coming out this week.
Yeah, man. It's the Shazam issue.
Yeah. It's the Sea Guy reunion issue, too, with Grant Morrison and Cameron Stewart.
Right, and as opposed to the New 52 Shazam, this guy is known as Captain Marvel.
Oh, nice. And this is definitely the big red cheese here.
Yeah. He's got his classic uniform on. You got Savannah in the background. I swear I saw some other versions of the Captain Marvel design for this issue, so maybe there's more than one costume in here.
Excuse me.
Sorry about that.
No problem. Yeah, I'm very excited for this. Multiversity, I feel like more than any other big event comic over the past few years has really lived up to the hype.
Right. Well, I don't know, even know if it's a I would consider it an event comic in that, like, it's not, I mean, there's a big event in it, and, you know, as for any story, you would call that an event, but, like, when I think of an event book as far as, like, comics goes, that, you know, there are crossovers to multiple books, and you don't really have that with Multiversity. You know, they're all kept in Multiversity.
That might be one of the things I'm enjoying about it, is that I don't have to feel guilty about not reading 11 other titles to get the full scope.
Right, because, I mean, I know that, like, DC and Marvel have done things where they're like, okay, well, we won't put, like, Final Crisis in Superman, but, you know, to know what's good, but, you know, repercussions will happen in that book. You know, you'll want to read, you know, Final Crisis Superman Beyond, or, you know, right, Final Crisis, Legion of Three Worlds, where, you know, that's where Superboy came back, you know.
Right.
So it doesn't really seem like that's going on either, where, like, there's, like, secondary tie-in issues that aren't part of the regular series but are part of a miniseries that you'll want to read in case you have your, you know, in case that's your favorite character, you know. So there's no one from the main New 52 Earth Prime universe, Earth Zero, or whatever we're calling it.
I think Earth Zero is what
Earth Zero. Yeah, so there's nobody from Earth Zero, I don't think, that is on there except Nix Ilotin. I mean, if you want to consider him Earth Zero, but I feel like he's a singular character.
Since he's a monitor, I guess he is the monitor of Earth Zero, or is he the monitor of Earth Prime? I'm not.
He was I don't know what he was the monitor of in Final Crisis, but I think he's just the last of the monitors.
Gotcha. Yeah, because it seemed in the Multiversity number one that he was the, if I'm remembering correctly, that he was the monitor of Earth Prime. Like, it was supposed to be like our world, you know, because and like he's reading comics and talking about different, you know, different universes, and talking online about, like, what DC is up to.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and I could be remembering that wrong. But I'm very excited for this story. Like the other stories, it doesn't seem to really. I don't think it's going to, you know, build tremendously on what happened in Multiversity Number One. We seem to just be getting like, you know, just one and done stories that have like differing amounts of effects lingering from Multiversity Number One.
Yeah, and I think if you reread them, you might see like some Earths affecting other Earths that, you know, because they're all they're communicating through a comic. So I think, you know, once we get to the end, we might see how they might interconnect more than we think. But for now, there's like, you know, like small things that you could put together, you know, in subtext or, you know, just with that comic that's floating around.
Right.
But yeah, as stories themselves, they just stand on their own as just really one and done cool stories.
Yeah, and each one has just been tremendous. So I'm really excited to read this.
Yeah, I feel like Multiversity is what Convergence will want to be and won't be.
Yeah, that's the feeling I'm getting from Convergence too. And even at $5 an issue, Multiversity will work out to be much cheaper as well, because Convergence looks like it's going to be a pretty hefty price tag.
Yeah, it's going to... I forget the exact number, but I know I sent you that link. It was like $300-something dollars, right?
I think it was $380, like if you buy every book.
So, ooh.
Yeah, minus any discount like your local comic book store might give you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bummer. Because, you know, I like reading all the event books.
Yeah, and you were super gung-ho about Convergence until basically the price tag came out.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. They're all, like, I think, $3.99 books.
Yeah. So much for holding the line at $2.99.
Yeah, what the heck, DC?
Yeah, there's no holding the line anywhere at DC these days.
Yeah.
Now, this is let me tell you, this is going to be a great week for comics, Dave. So we've got the Multiversity. That's a given. We've also got the third issue of Scott Snyder and Jock's Witches or Whiches, as some people are calling it from Image Comics.
The
correct title is Witches. It's just spelled W-Y-T-C-H-E-S.
Right.
And this book is just super creepy. And I think it's up there, like the order numbers on it are up there with like The Walking Dead. So it's been a hit right out of the gate.
I bet. I mean, from anything that I read that Scott Snyder's written, I've really liked it, and I love Jock. And I heard a little bit of an interview with him about what Witches was about, and it just sounds terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah, the one good thing about picking this up in single issues over trade is that Scott Snyder's been putting in little text pieces in the back, kind of like his introduction to horror as a kid, and not like horror movies or horror stories, but just kind of like events that happened in his childhood that inspired some of the events in Witches.
Right.
Yeah, like the issue one had a creepy story about like some abandoned car in the woods near where like he and his family used to like vacation. And that like played into Witches number one, I believe.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. And then also from Image, we've got the latest issue of The Wicked and Divine by McKelvey and Gillen. It's another series that I'm just loving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like these kind of comics that these guys are putting out in Image right now are what is really like making me believe, okay, maybe I can walk away from some big two books, because these creators seem to be doing some of their best stuff at Image right now.
Right, yeah. I really like the design work on these books. I haven't read any of them, but they always catch my eye because of just how slick they look.
Yeah. I really like the way they've been doing the cover design for The Wicked and The Divine. With the full frontal portraits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that slim sans serif, if it's not Helvetica, it's, you know, something close to it.
Right. And then with like the frame going around the portrait as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, just going back to Witches for a minute, I feel like the first two issues had a bunch of variant covers. This looks like the first one that you don't have to hunt down so many variant covers if that's your thing.
Wow, that's good. Oh, man. looks like Saga Volume 4 trade paperback's coming out.
Yes, and if anybody listening to this is in New York City, Forbidden Planet Comics on Broadway in the Union Square area, if you buy Saga Volume 4 from them, they will then give you the next issue of Saga for free when it comes out, I believe, in February.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so just I think they're just trying to get people into the series. So yeah, I think this week if you go and you pick it up there, they will give you the next issue of Saga free when it comes out.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Now I see Axis is still going. I thought this was going to be the last issue of Axis, but I don't think it is. We're 8 deep on this now. I'm excited to read it, but I'm not going to read it until it's over, I believe.
Yeah, talk about, you know, going from like really cool cover design to just like
vomiting.
Yeah, I mean, ugh.
Yeah, like I get what they're trying to do there with like the mirrored image, but yeah, I'm not a fan of this cover.
Yeah, not at all. I think Axis's covers, they just really are lacking in some sort of way. I like that, you know, Axis is one of the, what do you call those images that you could flip either way?
Symmetrical?
No, like, I forget what they were like, I think it was in Angels and Demons, they were talking about how you could, like, if you flip it around the other way, like, if you took this and flipped it it's the same thing.
Right. Okay, I got what you're saying. Yeah, I think it's one of the, like the worst title designs, because I remember when they were first promoting it, I was like, what is Sixus?
Yeah.
And I wasn't alone. A lot of people at the comic store that I used to shop at were saying the same thing.
Yeah. I definitely can see that too.
And it definitely, like every time I look at it, I see Sixus. I don't see Axis.
Yeah. That was that little trick of it, like being able to be flipped either way. Being Axis, I thought it was its only redeeming value. And you did bring up a good point that it does look like Sixus. But do you want to talk a little bit about spoilers that have been, the spoiler that was released about what's going on?
Yeah, sure. Axis? You mean about the Scarlet Witch Quicksilver Magneto?
Yeah,
that was huge.
Anybody that does not want to know what's going on in Access right now, you know, skip ahead a little bit here.
Yeah, I'd say go ahead like 2 or 3 minutes just to be safe.
Yeah.
So basically it was revealed that Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are not Magneto's children.
Yeah.
Which
she cast this spell to like end the line at their family line or something. With them or something,
right.
Something like that. And basically, you know, Quicksilver is like, you know, writhing around in pain and, you know, Magneto's fine, you know, like he's not affected.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just like, boom, it was all a lie, you know, which, you know, I believe it.
I honestly cannot keep up with who's Magneto's kid and who's not Magneto's kid. Like, I feel like this is something that gets flip-flopped, you know, every 10 years or so. Because I remember when I was a kid, that's when it was first revealed in the 80s in the Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries that Magneto actually was Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch's parents. In the past, it was hinted that he was Polaris's, the green-haired X-Men, Mistress of Magnetism, that he was her father, and then they were like, no, that was all a lie.
You want to know what it is? They're going to reveal that, like, that Magneto is actually impotent, and, like, this is just his way of, like, overcompensating. He's like, no, you're my kid, and you're my kid.
Like, oh yeah, Wolverine's my kid too. But then I think it was either in the 90s or maybe the early 2000s, they went back on it again and said, no, Polaris, Lorna Dane, she is actually Magneto's child. They hinted at it, she might be, she might not be, and now it's like, yes, she is Magneto's child. In House of M, she was in like the Magneto house. And now they're saying, no, oh, Vision's, not Vision, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, no, no, not Magneto's kids anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, soon it's going to be like, Charles Xavier, you're my child.
Yeah. And
that's
also,
that's impossible, Xavier, Eric.
You're an inhuman, too. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it seems obvious that the main reason they're doing this is because Marvel Studios has the rights to, or shares the rights to Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch with Fox, except Fox is the only one who can use Magneto, making it so that Fox can say, hey, as they hinted at in the Days of Futures Past movie, that Magneto is their father. But without Magneto in the Avengers movies, now they can just say, oh, no, actually, we might not even be mutants. Maybe we're inhumans.
Right.
Which makes, like, I could see, like, where they're going with this, since they were raised in, like, the Wundergore Mountains, which aren't by the Himalayas at all, but they were raised by another genetically modified, like, bovine, this wet nurse who was, like, a cow turned half-human, half-cow. They're relaunching after Access Uncanny Avengers and it's Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver on the cover, and it says no more mutants, which harkens back to the end of House of M.
Hmm.
But it looks like this is actually, it might be not declaring no more mutants in the Marvel Universe, but more that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are mutants no more.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I mean,
at least.
What's that?
That's my theory, at least.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty cool way of getting around it for, like, the you know, to kind of sync up with the movies, and they did it, like, you know, kind of interestingly enough in the comics. You know, it's always neat when, like, they pull something off that, you know, their hand's being forced, but it doesn't seem forced.
Yes, I agree. Like, kind of like the way Grant Morrison got rid of basically the spandex costumes during his run of X-Men.
Right, right. Yeah, that was really cool. Speaking of things that seem forced but are good reads, Fantastic Four, number 14. Everyone's, you know, been saying, you know, that the Fantastic Four is ending here because Fox owns the movie rights and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if anybody's reading the book, because it's been a great, great, great run. And this seems, I think this is going to be the build up to that last, to the Fantastic Forever Gone or something. I forget the name of the title, but the final story arc in Fantastic Four, and the all-new Invaders are in this, and so is the Future Foundation Kids. It's going to be a blast, and I'm so looking forward to it.
That's awesome. And when is Fantastic Four ending? Is it ending in the spring?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they announced it so early that it was ending that, like, I was like, oh, man, I got just a couple more issues of
me too.
This James Robinson Fantastic Four, but, you know, I've got several more. So, you know, because it usually double ships too. So, you know, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, because I thought it was ending in November, then I thought it was ending in January. Now it looks like it's probably not going to end until, like, March or April.
Yeah, so that's sweet.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's a good book.
Yeah.
And here, like, there's an Axis tie-in, a Hobgoblin miniseries, where Hobgoblin is now a hero, because that's one of the things, is that some heroes have become villains and some villains have become heroes, that right. I'm really interested in reading. The art is by Javier Rodriguez, who did the art on the Spider-Gwen issue.
Oh.
And I really love his art style, so I almost, like, picked up this miniseries, even though I haven't read any of Access, and it like, just looking at the different covers for the book, it just looks so fun and entertaining.
That's cool.
Yeah, so this is a book that I'm even more excited to read than the actual main Access title.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so any other books you want to highlight?
Not really.
Actually, Batman, new issue of Batman and Robin's coming out. Now, I picked up the last issue.
Oh, Justice League, too.
Oh, nice. I picked up the last issue of Batman and Robin just because it had that cool, like, all Robins, you know, cover where even Batgirl was dressed as Robin. And not realizing that it was, like, in the middle of an ongoing storyline.
Yeah, the Robin Rises Omega or whatever.
Yes, I didn't realize that. I thought Robin Rises was over, but it definitely wasn't. And Peter Tomasi is such a good writer, though, that I didn't feel, like, lost or anything. It just, you know, it... All right, I'm in the middle of a story, but it was like one story within that story there.
Mm-hmm.
The next part of that is coming out, and it has an awesome cover drawn by Patrick Gleason of Darkseid facing off against Batman in his like bat armor.
Yeah, it looks like a bat armor that's made of parademon like armor.
Oh, yeah, it does look like that.
Yeah, it also has an awesome variant cover by Darwin Cook. We talked about the Darwin Cook covers last week, but DC's throwing down with a lot more this week.
Yeah, I really love, speaking of the Darwin Cook variant covers, the Batman Superman Darwin Cook variant cover is fantastic.
That's great. I love the Teen Titans and Catwoman, too.
Yeah. I really hope they just release like all of these. And the regular Batman series Darwin Cook cover just looks like it could have been a promo poster for Batman the Animated Series.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, and we have a new issue of Justice League, which is part of that Amazo storyline, which has just been great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. DC's got a lot of good books coming out this week.
Yeah, looks like everybody does. Bad week on the wallet.
Yeah.
Good week on the eyes, bad week on the wallet.
Yeah, so are we going to play our favorite game?
Yeah, we're going to play our favorite game, which is where do you spend that $20?
All right, I'm doing it now. I am. It's only two books, Saga Volume 4 and Multiversity.
Wow. And if you bought that in New York City at Forbidden Planet, you would have gotten a bonus book out of it.
Right, in a month.
Now let's see. Okay, I'm not that. Wow, that was like the easiest you've ever done in this game.
Yeah, usually I'm like, but you know, I was like, Brian K. Vaughan, Grant Morrison, boom, done.
Yeah. I'm not criticizing your choices at all. That is definitely a way to do it. And what is the Saga Volume 4? Is that $15?
Yeah.
Because if it's 16, you're going over your budget.
I'll let it slide for myself. Oh, whoa. I didn't even notice that Sandman Overture number 4 is coming out this week.
Yes, I did notice that. I'm excited for it. Not that I've been reading it. I only read the first issue. But I'm excited that once it ends, I'm going to pick up the trade.
Yeah, I'd suggest anybody for this series just wait for the trade. Cause,
the first issue came out... over a year ago.
Was it that long ago? I thought it came out
last November.
You could be totally right. I know it was like quite a while ago, and man, like I was like, I am glad I waited for trade.
No, definitely. I could have swore that Sandman Overture number 1 came out in November, but maybe I'm wrong. Let me just look that up real quick. October 30th, 2013. That's when Sandman Overture number 1 came out. So, wow. Yeah, like even earlier than I thought. It came out at the end of October. All right, now I've got a harder job than Dave. I'm not picking up Saga Volume 4, though I feel like I should. Instead, I am going to get Multiversity, Thunderworld. That's $5 right there, eating a lot out of my budget. And then I'm jumping down to Image. I'm going to pick up Witches number 3. Moves me up to $8, I believe, unless that's a $3.50 book. I hope it's not, because I hate dealing with those 50-cent pieces. Nope, it's a $3 book. Okay, so then my next book, though, is a $3.50 book, and that's Wicked and Divine number 6, another title that I'm just loving.
Oh, I got a 50-cent coin in there.
Yeah, I'm now at $11.50, and, you know, feeling kind of weird. A book we neglected that we both love, Ms. Marvel, has a new issue coming out this week. Ms. Marvel number 10, that's a must pick up for me.
Awesome cover there too with
with Ms.
Lockjaw.
Marvel, yeah, and Lockjaw. So that brings me, let's see, is it at 950? So 1450 on the books. I don't have much of a budget left. I see there's a new issue of Storm coming out. I won't be picking that up. They did give away the first issue of that free recently on Comixology, and I read it today. It's actually a good book.
That's Charles Soule, right?
I think it's Greg Pak.
Oh, you're right. It is Greg Pak.
Yeah, and the first issue of it was very good. So I don't have much money left. I am. It's a tough call between, the next part of Batman Endgame, the next part of Robin Rises. Both those Batman stories have been great, and the next part and Justice League. And I think I'm gonna go Justice League.
Good choice. I would go Justice League
too. Yeah. Interestingly enough, neither Ivan Reis nor Doug Monkey is doing the art. It's Jason Fabak doing the art this issue, but he's
a new ongoing artist.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
And he's a good artist too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't feel bad about that. I think that brings me up to 1950, and we'll call that a day.
Yeah, that's great. Wow. Good job. Good job, Billy.
And if you're a little over budget because of Saga, you could have my 50 cents.
Thanks.
So what did you read this week, Dave?
Well, we were talking about event books. I have been just chugging through all of the Futures and Tie-In Month books.
Oh, nice. So, like, all the regular series, like, issues, like Wonder Woman Futures End.
Right. So I'm almost finished with that. I'm on the last week of books.
Wow.
So they came out to about, like, 20 books a week, 20 bucks a week, because there were about, like, 10 books a week. So I was able to keep within budget, and I spent my lot of money. on that each week. So I was like, all right, now that these are all $1.99, buy a chunk of you. And I'm on the last week, and next week I will tell all you guys what I think you should go and read, and why you should read it, and what you should read for what you're looking for. Like, if you're just looking for a good story, go read this one. If you're looking for a cool tie-in to the Future Zen stuff, what books to read. So
that's cool. I almost picked up Wonder Woman Future Zen today because I had finally finished all the 99-cent sale issues of Wonder Woman, but that still left me about 4 issues shy of finishing Azzarello and Chang's run. And one of those issues not included in the 99-cent sale was the Future's End issue. And I thought about buying it, but I was like, this isn't part of this storyline that I'm completely in love with.
Yeah, it was written by Charles Soule, and it tied in with the issue of Superman, Wonder Woman, Future's End. It's a good story, but yeah, you didn't really need to read it at all.
And it makes sense that those issues would tie in with each other because Charles Soule was writing Superman Wonder Woman at the time.
Right.
Though I believe now he's off the book because he is exclusive to Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I picked up every issue through issue 34, which is the second to last issue, and actually read that today. And man, I'm so excited to read the final issue. I just didn't have a chance to read it today. Another thing, I'm excited for a new release this week. It's the second issue of the Finches, Mr. and Mrs. Finch run on Wonder Woman. Not because I'm excited for their run, because that David Finch doesn't really do it for me. I get it does for others, but it just doesn't work for me.
Sure.
This should drop Wonder Woman number 35, the last Azzarello Chang issue, down $1 in price.
That's right.
So I managed to time reading this perfectly, I think.
Yeah, well, I should be just about there too, because I I got that text from you saying that you were reading that issue of Wonder Woman, and I quick purchased it and read like half of it, and then it's really good. I'm excited, and I agree with what you said about Orion.
Yeah, I texted Dave today, and I was like, I love Orion.
Orion is definitely one of the best characters in the series. I kind of wish, you know, someone had given him this kind of character more than like the one note that we're used to seeing writers give him, that, you know, he's the dog of war, that he's crazy and just, you know, wants to, you know, keep it under control. And I like that part of his character, but, you know, I just like that he has a personality here. And I feel like Azrael might be the first person who gave him like a solid personality, you know?
Yeah, like I enjoyed him in Morrison's run on Justice League, but he was kind of a one-note character there. And
right, I think he serves his functions, and I feel like a lot of the New Gods serve functions, but they don't have like relatable personalities.
Yeah, I'd say the only exception to that is probably Mr. Miracle.
Yeah,
I
would say
the classic Scott Lang version, like, and that's just part of
Scott,
his character.
Scott Free, you mean?
Yeah, what did I say? Scott Lang, you know, yeah. Mr. Miracle, and the amazing, the miracle, like he shrinks to the size of an ant. That's a miracle. Scott Lang, Mr. Miracle.
Yeah.
Oh man, I wish this was one where Ali was co-hosting, just so you could have heard that in your car and like, you know, flipped your lid.
What? No.
Dave's gonna listen to this podcast during his commute tomorrow and be like,
"No, I still can't believe you said that." Scott Lang, come on, wrong company.
Yeah, and we're talking about the first Mr. Miracle, and you're bringing up the second Ant-Man. Yeah. Oh man, that sore throat is acting up. Sorry about that.
Yeah, mine's. I'm feeling a little rough here as well.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I was gonna say the other thing. Well, did you want to continue on Wonder Woman? Because I'm gonna jump away from it.
No. I'm
good. Okay. The other thing I read is I've never read Alan Moore's Swamp Thing comics.
Mm.
I know they're supposed to be amazing, and I just never got around to reading them.
Neither have I, to tell you the truth.
I've only read basically one issue, and if anyone's ever only read one issue of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, it's probably the same issue. It's called The Autopsy. It's actually Alan Moore's second issue on Swamp Thing, which I always thought was weird. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the one that says the Swamp Thing was never Alec Holland. Swamp Thing's actually like a plant that has gained sentience and thought it was Alec Holland.
Right.
And, you know, it has like, and it's basically Jason Woodrue, the Floronic Man, is doing an autopsy of Swamp Thing for one of Swamp Thing's villains, who had thought he had murdered Swamp Thing. And he's like, this, you know, Swamp Thing has lungs that serve no function, like has like a vegetation that is where the brain should be, but it's not an actual brain. Like it has, you know, like the lungs don't breathe, like the heart doesn't beat. There's like a capillary system that doesn't actually like move things around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the one of the classic Alan Moore Swamp Thing issues. So I picked up Saga the Swamp Thing Volume 1. They released his entire run on Swamp Thing in 6 hardcover volumes. Picked up the first one and read through it. I get why The Autopsy is the one that they reprint, because Alan Moore's actual first issue is basically wrapping up the previous writer's issues and like just tying up a bunch of loose ends. Not like this like milestone comic that you're like, oh wow, look at this. He's just dealing with stuff that happened in the previous issue.
Yeah.
Saga of the Swamp Thing Volume 1 is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I highly, highly recommend it. The art by Steve Azzett is gorgeous. You can tell though, like where he and John Talabom had to like rush sometimes, because this was a monthly comic and they didn't have, this is when comics were still being sold on newsstands and you couldn't like delay a book coming out by months. but their art is so detailed, and Alan Moore's writing in this book is so great. Like, I immediately rushed out and picked up volumes 2 and volume 3.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to breeze through these books.
Wow, that's really cool. Yeah, I've always wanted to read Swamp Thing, but I, you know, just, you know, there's so many books out there, I just never got around to it. And sometimes I think reading Alan Moore's interviews, you know, turned me off on him a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely get that. He and John Byrne are two people where it's hard to separate, like, the art from the artist, especially. And I'd put Frank Miller in there too, especially in their, like, later careers.
Yeah, I think Frank Miller, when he goes all, like, little nutty, you know, like conservative nutty, you know.
Yeah, anytime he goes on like an anti-Muslim rant, then it's just like, okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah. I really liked your one. Could you please stop talking?
Post 9/11 Frank Miller is a little weird.
Yeah. I kind of like wanted to read Holy Terror just from an academic point of view, but I couldn't even like bring myself to get past a couple of pages of it.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's really cool. Yeah, I'm definitely, Swamp Thing's definitely on my list for stuff I do want to read.
This is Alan Moore pre-Watchmen. Like, this is very young Alan Moore, and you could tell it's a young writer writing it, and it's not like bold letters Alan Moore writing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this, and he's having like a lot of fun with the series too, which is just awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, I know, like, I've heard Len Wein talk about Alan Moore and working with him, I think on Nerdist Writers Panel.
Right.
Like one of the guys on there.
Yeah, because Len Wein, for anybody who doesn't know, was the co-creator of Swamp Thing and the original writer of Swamp Thing, and also Alan Moore's editor once Alan Moore took over the book.
Yes, and I think he was the editor on Watchmen, too.
Yes.
And, like, his just view of Alan is just not what everybody, like, this, you know, everybody puts him in this iconic status, and, you know, Len Wein doesn't, because he was there.
Right.
And he was, you know, faxing pages back and forth and stuff, and so, like, when he talks about him, it just really brings it down to earth that this guy was just, like, writing stuff, you know, it was really good, and, you know, but he was working with editors and, you know, changing things, and, you know, it wasn't like, you know, this high point of, I'm trying to look for the words that I'm thinking here, but, like, you know, it's, whenever you think about, like, the stuff he writes and how he talks about it, it always seems so sacred, and mm-hmm. When you listen to, like, hit, or when you read stuff in interviews with Alan Moore, like, you know, why would they touch that, what I did, you know, because it was perfect, you know, and, you know, and it doesn't make it seem like the guy's, like, working day to day with Len Wein doing this and that and, you know, getting ideas turned down and, you know, then coming up with better ideas. And, you know, you don't think about that when you think about Alan Moore. And it really, you know, kind of puts in perspective, like, that, you know, this guy's a great writer, but, like, you know, he's a guy who's a great writer.
Definitely. And, yeah, it's funny because it's funny that, you know, you talk about Alan Moore the way he talks about his own stories in interviews. And I was thinking about that earlier this week. I was thinking about basically that Green Lantern short story that he did that pretty much is what inspired the Red Lantern. It's like it introduced the seven inversions and Atrocitus. And I remember when Geoff Johns used that to, like, as the jumping off point for the Red Lanterns and also for
the Blackest Night.
Yeah, Blackest Night. And Alan Moore, like, gave this interview where he was like, "Oh, I can't believe." I'm paraphrasing here, but he's basically saying, "Oh, I can't believe DC is taking this, like, half an idea I had and, you know, just basing their whole line off it." And he said it in, like, a condescending way, when I feel like, if anything, it's like, you know, he should be a little pleased by it, that, like, this kernel of an idea, because that's really all it was. Like, you read that short story, I remember seeing like Alan Moore diehards online saying, "Oh man, Geoff Johns stole this the idea for Blackest Night from Alan Moore." Like he clearly didn't, if you read the story.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's where you also go, well, didn't you just take someone else's idea and run with it?
That's true.
In
yeah.
Swamp Thing and in
Watchmen.
In Watchmen and
Tom Strong.
Green Lantern and you know, like, and not saying that he doesn't have his own ideas, you know, that's not the point. Like,
right.
You know, it's not knocking him, but it's saying that it's a little, you know, like,
it's just knocking, if anything, it's just knocking his argument.
Right, that, you know, yeah, this is, you know, or League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Right, right. But I will say this, yeah. Alan Moore interviews be damned. Swamp Thing is a great comic.
And oh, definitely- I'm sure. I love all the Alan Moore books I read. I mean, whenever I get to reading them, like, I love Promethea, I love Tom Strong, you know.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, everything I read from ABC when that was first coming out, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, yeah, top 10, all that stuff is great.
Yeah. But yeah, and this Swamp Thing book is making me excited that once it's done, I think I'm going to go straight into I'll probably skip decades of Swamp Thing and go straight into Scott Snyder's run and then go from there straight into Charles Soule's run.
Yeah. There's supposed to be some good like Mark Millar stuff and other Swamp Thing stuff in there, and there was like, you know, there's a bunch of probably worthwhile Swamp Thing stuff that gets overlooked.
Yeah, I think I might have to dig around to find it to find out those.
Yeah, I know there was like a Grant Morrison, Mark Millar, and then like, whatchamacallit, Brian K. Vaughan did that run on Swamp Thing with the girl.
Yeah, I actually read a few issues of that, and then I kind of just like fell off it.
Right. I never read that. I was interested in reading that.
I got into it because of like a comic shop news interview with him, and I was like, oh, this sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm.
After like three issues, it just didn't hold my interest anymore.
Right.
That was at a different point in my life. I might appreciate it more these days.
you want to talk about some comic news?
Yeah. there's like a lot of news that has burst recently.
Right.
And one that I want to talk about is, I don't know if you saw this announcement from Archie Comics that came out on Monday, but they're relaunching Archie with back to number one. And we talked about, actually in last week's episode, how Archie has really been taking risks, but mm-hmm. has then had the regular book that had like the same Archie house style. Well, now they're relaunching Archie, written by Mark Waid, art by Fiona Staples, and it's basically bringing Archie into the present.
Wow.
And we're going to get, according to the publisher of
Wait,
Archie...
Wait, so is this the new 52 Archie?
Kind of, except it seems like they're and we are getting, yeah, and we haven't had any fanboy outcry where they're like, 75 years of Archie comics are being wiped away. Why have I bought any of these Archie comics? Like, the news seems to be relatively, for the most part, positive. I was looking at Comic Vine's article coverage of this, and somebody left a comment that said, oh, man, maybe, you know, wow, they'll just do anything to get people. Maybe I'll finally buy an Archie comic. And I was like, you really should have read Afterlife with Archie, or, like, the new horror comic of Sabrina, because both of those are great.
Mm-hmm.
Her promo image that features Jughead, Archie, and Betty looks tremendous.
Wow. Yeah, I'll have to.
She's already tweeted that she's only doing three issues of Archie, though Mark Waid, I believe, is going to be the ongoing writer for a while. She said that these three issues of Archie will not get in the way of the saga schedule. Like, it works. She's worked it into her regular saga schedule.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
So wow, this is awesome.
Yeah. So saga won't be delayed at all. And according to the publisher of Archie Comics, we will be getting the origin of the Betty and Veronica feud over Archie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they've always fought over him. We never actually found out, like, why.
Well, because Archie's, you know, a redhead Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. I don't have anything else.
Yeah, and it looks like Archie's also getting an update to his hairstyle, where his hair just looks a little more normal than, you know, the wavy, like, rows of wheat that he usually has.
Right, right.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited for this.
I am too.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to pick a couple of those issues up, or even look at it in a trade.
Yeah. So what piece of news caught your eye?
Well, I have to say, DC's solicitations for March.
Yeah.
Now, this is where Convergence starts. So, and I think everything's been building to that. So we're seeing Futures End ending, Earth 2 World's End ending. This is also coinciding mm-hmm. with the end of Multiversity.
Yeah, and the weekly Batman Eternal series is ending too.
Right, as well as the majority of the Green Lantern line of books.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Which I was shocked at the ones that they were canceling. Like, I was figuring, you know, Red Lanterns and Sinestro were going away. Red Lanterns is going away, but also Green Lantern Corps and Green Lantern New Guardians.
Yeah, I was shocked that Green Lantern Corps is ending, just because that's been, like, to me, the number two Green Lantern book. But maybe I'm just, like, looking back on the glory days of Tomasi and Gleason's run on that title.
Yeah, I mean, that has been running. I think they had, when Green Lantern number one started, it was the same week, I believe, it was, like, Green Lantern Corps Recharge.
Yes.
And, yeah, so it's been running pretty much since the Green Lantern books got rebooted.
Yeah,
so we're, you know, it's...
We're talking over 10 years at this point.
Yeah. So it's pretty shocking. Aquaman and the Others, final issue, not too shocking. I was wondering how long Aquaman could hold two books.
Yeah.
And it was Dan Jurgens, and we've had conversations about, you know, how much excitement we have for his stuff now, which is, you know, or lack of excitement. Yeah. Infinity. Like go ahead.
If it was 1993 and a Dan Jurgens written Aquaman spinoff comic was coming out, I'd be like, Dan Jurgens, must buy.
Right, right. And we're also seeing Infinity Man and the Forever People end with issue 9. Clarion, yeah. The Witch Boy, not in there, Witch Boy, but Clarion, also ending with issue 6.
Wow.
So, and I think a lot of, like, the Green Lantern books and the New God book is going to tie into Convergence, or DC just announced their Free Comic Book Day book that's mm-hmm. too big to tell you what it is. So apparently I think Free Comic Book Day is probably going to pop right in right after Convergence, and we're going to have, like, a big event, and we're going to see a lot of relaunches with that book. We're also seeing the end of Secret Origins book, which isn't too shocking, because it's $5 an issue, and it's...
It wasn't that good.
Yeah. that's a lot to ask. Star Spangled War Stories also ending, which was good, but, you know...
Yeah.
It's not shocking that that's ending. Trinity of Sin number 6 is also ending. That's where they put Phantom Stranger, Pandora, and Question all into the same book. Maybe combining some sales there. I guess not. I don't know.
I think you could still combine the sales of those three characters and still end up with a failing book.
Right. So, you know, there's and World's Finest is ending too, which was Power Girl and Huntress, and then became Earth 2's Superman and Batman.
Right. And I'm wondering if that was always the plan for that to end after a few issues.
I have a feeling that...
Like after the switch.
Yeah, yeah. I have a feeling that might be the case. So, yeah. So there's a lot of DC books, you know, ending. I'm Oh, and Arkham Manor is also ending.
Yeah, and the oh really, Arkham Manor is ending. Oh, that
Yeah.
makes sense because that was tied in
Tied
heavily to
in.
Batman and Batman Eternal.
Right. But Batwoman is ending too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the majority of the line here is ending, which is like it seems like a good, maybe like not a majority, but maybe like a quarter of the line is ending.
Yeah, it's 13 ongoing monthlies and 3 weeklies that are coming to an end in March.
Wow.
That's so yeah, that's you're talking about a quarter of the new 52, you know.
Yeah, so I'm very interested to see what we're gonna get after that. You know, like what the relaunch books will be and what how they tie into the new event and stuff like that, because this all seems rather event driven. And some definitely sales driven as well, like Star Spangled War stories and Trinity of Sin. But yeah, so that's the coolest thing. Also of note is that DC's doing movie homage variant covers, which are all really cool.
Oh yeah, that's great. And I'm glad that for the Batgirl cover, they had Cliff Chang update the illustration he did of combining Batgirl and Purple Rain. He did an updated version of that with Batgirl's new costume.
And I'm guessing these are probably all Warner movies, and that's how they're being able to do it.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I'm not sure. There might be like a, yeah, I'm not
Like
sure.
parody law might let them be able to do
Yes.
it.
Yeah. But I really don't know.
I love the Aquaman Free Willy one, and the Superman 40, which I believe is that Superfly?
Yes, that is Superfly.
Yeah.
Yeah, those covers all look great. Cliff Chang actually did a series of postcards that he sells at conventions, where he did Batgirl and Purple Rain, and the other another awesome one was the Teen Titans, like the 60s Teen Titans, and the Breakfast Club poster.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of those. I was hoping that they would have just had him update like all of those for these covers, but
Right.
no such luck. I believe the Teen Titans cover is the Lost Boys, the
Yeah.
1980s vampire movie.
You are right. You are right.
Yeah. So yeah, I can't believe that so many DC books are coming to an end. I'm sure something's going to come out of Convergence, and that we're going to get more titles. I don't think DC is like, oh, you know what? We're just going to publish less books.
Right, yeah, there's definitely there's something going on here.
Yeah, I think everything will be Batman and Batman and Kyle Rayner, Batman and the Infinity Man.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. That
Batfinity.
that would definitely sell a lot more books.
It just seems to be the way they're moving. They're like, for every book that gets canceled, like another Bat title gets added.
Yeah, it's gonna stop at some point. Yeah. So, you have any news you want to talk about?
Yeah, we talked about DC, we talked about Archie, and then the only thing that really stands out at me is that we've now seen what the Vision looks like in the upcoming Avengers Age of Ultron movie.
Yeah, very cool.
Definitely that. I think that's the best way to put it. The Vision looks very cool.
Looks good. I mean, there's nothing to complain about. There's nothing. Yeah, it just looks good, man.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the Vision is going to be like Jarvis given a body, since Paul Bettany is doing the voice of both of them.
Oh, I'm sure that's kind of gonna be the idea behind it.
Yeah, there's no Wonder Man to lend his brain patterns from in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Maybe that's for the best.
I have a bit of news that that's New Blood related. So I was looking to see after that podcast that you did with Ali.
Yes.
And you guys were talking about loose cannon.
Yes.
And all the bloodlines. I'm like, I love bloodlines. And I went on to comic book database just to see like how far did these characters go?
Right.
After their, you know, initial launch. And DC definitely did like a big push afterwards for them, you know?
Right.
They didn't whatchamacallit. They gave some of them miniseries, like Loose Cannon, the Pizbarats, and the year after in their showcase, they each month had a different New Blood in there, and then like a lot of the characters showed up in like at least a two issue arc in the regular book of the annual that they appeared in, and so some of them stuck around for a really long time. And so I was, you know, I was poking around there, and this is the big Bloodlines news of the week.
I'm excited for this.
Loose Cannon is in the New 52.
What?
Yes! The first New Blood to appear in the New 52 is Loose Cannon. It went, you know...
We're talking Purple Blanca?
Yeah, Purple Blanca slid under the radar.
Wow.
He first appeared in Teen Titans number 11.
Huh.
Yeah.
Are you sure that wasn't Beast Boy?
I am positive.
Actually, I'm not that sure.
I haven't read it yet, but, you know, I usually don't read Jeff Lobdell.
Scott Lobdell.
Scott Lobdell. I'm sorry. Jeff Loeb created Loose Cannon.
Ah, I gotcha.
Lobdell created the New 52 Loose Cannon. And I'm gonna make that exception, and I am gonna read Teen Titans number 11.
Wow, yeah. As a Bloodlines, you know, fanboy that you are, I can't believe that it hadn't happened in the past.
Yeah, I can't believe this went under the radar. But, I mean, with most things in the New 52, I hope he has a mock turtleneck-type collar.
Which doesn't make any sense because he doesn't wear a shirt.
Well, you know what? It's kind of mandatory in the New 52, so...
Maybe his pants will have, like, a mock turtleneck collar?
His top button will just, like, make that little V.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, you forgot to do your top button. Oh, no, it's a look. Welcome to the New 52.
Yeah, so you're welcome for the Bloodlines news. Keeping it alive. Keeping it alive.
Yeah, it's funny when you were like, I have some New Blood news. I was like, is this how Dave tells me that his wife is pregnant? Like, I was like, I was just at this guy's house yesterday. I'm like, that would... All right, I'm going to go with this. I was like, all right, I'm on the edge of my seat, Dave. What's... You're like, I've got some New Blood news. I was like, Billy and all my friends who listen to this podcast, I'm going to be a dad. I'm like, whoa. Nope, but instead...
Sorry, Mom, I didn't tell you first.
Yeah, that's why, you got to listen to the podcast, because chances are this will be where Dave announces that he's going to have a child. It's not happening yet. This is just a false alarm.
Yeah, not yet. It will happen soon.
Yeah. So with that news, we are going to call this episode to a close. We're going to bring this episode to a close. I'd like to thank Dave for co-hosting this with me. I'd like to thank all you guys for listening to the podcast every week. We definitely appreciate it. You can subscribe to the Tuesday Night Comics podcast for free on iTunes. And you can usually find the last 10 or so episodes there at any given time. If you'd like to listen to all 50 episodes of the Tuesday Night Comics podcast, you could find them all at TuesdayNightMovies.com, and you could also find them at archive.org and SoundCloud, and on SoundCloud. Well, actually, it's SoundCloud, just the two most recent ones. But yeah, head to TuesdayNightComics.com, type in podcast, and that will bring up every episode of the Tuesday Night Comics podcast. So, for Billy, me, and Dave,
Hey, thank you. Bye.
Yes, thank you. Goodbye, and have a great week, and enjoy your Tuesday night.